Oh, so once upon a time, there was a question that was asked of me, and I gave it some time and some consideration. The question was simply this: it was what is your favorite thing about your commute? So I thought about this for a while, and I realized, you know, I live in the woods. I live literally in the woods. There's a river and there's mountains, and that's really cool. But it's not the coolest part. The coolest part is I get to wake up, walk out my front door, and walk alongside of this creek. It's called Hamilton Creek. And I live less than a mile from work, and I walk along this creek every day, and I can look in and see the salmon. And then I walk into the parking lot of the manufacturing company where I work, and that's my commute on a good day. My name is Bill Skiffington, and you're listening to Open Roads?
Open Roads.
Or not, I was going to say Open Bros Podcasting, but that's not right. My name is Bill Skiffington, and you're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Leah Benson.
Yeah, you are.
I think that part's cut off on my thing. I need to be prompted to say my name.
And we're broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia. I can keep going if you want.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I'll tell you where I start.
Sweet. We are the show that brings you so many reverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains, and transit, and simpler living. And today, those damn bike thieves.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Leah, thank you for filling in. Aaron is away for work, and he forgot to tell me about it until just like yesterday or something. So it's all good. We know a lot of good people.
Happy to be here.
We're doing things. but that's where he is. So anyways, I hope, Aaron, you have a good weekend away for work. And or week. I don't know how long it is. However long. This indeterminate time that you are gone. May you come back and be happy once you are here with us. We're also in the room with Brian Hance from Bike Index. It's good to see you, sir.
It's extremely good to be here.
Thanks for coming in. We're
going
to talk about stolen bikes, how it happens, and what you can do about it in just a couple minutes. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, there's tons and tons of news to be talked about with that. But first, Leah, you're going to see some music, right? If we can make it happen, you're going to be super fancy.
I'm going to be super fancy tonight. I'm going to the symphony.
Yeah.
I feel really cool just saying it, actually.
How often do you go to see
I've never gone to see the symphony. Another right around the same time as I was contacted by you yesterday, I got contacted by someone else. It's like, I have an extra ticket to the symphony for free. Would you like to go? And I'm like, yeah.
That's simpler living right there.
Yeah, that is simple living.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's see. I was trying to think of that. There's a bunch of small things I wanted to mention before we get into the heft of today. I got buzzed by a vehicle on Wednesday morning or Tuesday morning. It was like sometime last week, and I was riding my bike down 33rd Avenue, which is kind of sort of busy, but at the time of morning that I'm there, it's not all that busy. There's just a couple of cars that are rambling about going from one place to another, usually to the industrial district up on Columbia Boulevard. So I was being followed by a car that apparently was unhappy with me going at about 18 miles an hour downhill, and decided... This doesn't happen a lot in Portland, but it happened this time around. He decided to kind of like accelerate behind me, lay on his horn, and then pass at a really close distance. And that was unpleasant. I did not enjoy that. We ended up at the stoplight at Killingsworth together. And so I pulled up next to him, also, which I don't usually do, but pulled up next to his driver's side window and just said, "Dude, what the hell? You could have killed me." And he said, "You're blocking the road, man." And so we kind of had that short discourse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I was necessarily very diplomatic. I would have liked to have been cooler and more about my wits, but I don't get killed that often. And so it's one of those things where, like, when it almost happens, I think I just kind of lost some cool. I don't think I was, like, angry, but has that ever happened to you?
It's never happened to me. I think it's kind of a good thing sometimes to lose your cool, to let people know that affects you. that, like, behavior like that. My favorite time that it, well, kind of happened to me, I was riding with a dear friend of mine who's just amazing. And they had a car. We were going down 42nd, just south of Fremont, like where it starts to curve, kind of.
Okay, so you're going downhill?
We were going downhill, and they had taken the full lane, and a car passed them on their right-hand side, which is obviously just not cool.
Right.
And so their response was to throw their bike to the side of the road, jump off their bike and grab their U-lock and chase the car down the middle of the street.
Oh, are you serious?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which obviously they weren't going to catch the car. And it was just so humorous to watch. And I hope that the person in the car saw this in their rearview mirror.
Wow.
And just realized, like, wow, I really, really messed up.
That's intense.
I know.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Because I was going to bring up the, there's some folks out of Minnesota, Minnesota Public Radio. There's a program called Pedal Hub, which is pretty great. But they have this term that they refer to called the U-Lock Justice.
Ooh.
And it's a thing that apparently, what's the name of the band? It's Rambo, but all spelled out and like an acronym with periods between each letter. It's a band called Rambo that has a song called U-Lock Justice. So
I like that.
I think that actually originates out of New York.
Does it?
I always thought that was something that they did to bike. Like, I'm not even kidding here. That's one of the weird facts. Like, they used to actually U-lock people by the neck to poles.
Really?
They caught them stealing bikes, and that was what they always referred. Maybe it has. Maybe it's a multi-purpose term.
That's intense. So it was really literally death to bike thieves.
Yeah, well, it was U-lock your face to a pole.
Okay.
To bike thieves,
that's tricky.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, though. So one of the weird things that I deal with in You learn a lot of really strange things about ancillary products like related to theft and biking. There's a company that makes a rear-facing camera that's disguised as a light.
Yeah, Bike Snob talked about that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of super low, even like Kodak has a little cube camera now that would be absolutely perfectly mountable. So there's a lot of guys here in Portland that do the GoPro thing, but you've got this, you know, 6x, it's ridiculous. You look like, you know, Neil Armstrong.
You're a cyborg. Kind
of they have some really nice products that are like super, super, super tiny.
Okay.
Nobody knows they're there.
Right.
So but they're also hideously expensive.
Okay. So if you're rolling in money, you can get surveillance.
If you're rolling
equipment.
In cash, yeah. And you really want to like cash in on that YouTube, you know, the YouTube video of you actually like delivering the cool line. That
right.
You off, but you have to have the line.
Excuse me, sir. I almost died. Yeah.
And now you must die.
U-Lock Justice.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the intonation that they give it, but they say it like I'm blanking on the word. What's it like when everybody says it all at once?
In unison.
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We
just
justice.
Said that in unison. That was awesome.
Should we say unison in unison?
One more time.
Three, one, two, three.
Unison. How great that sounds.
That's really great.
My
guys.
Goodness. So anyways, that happened to me, and it doesn't happen often, but it was a good reminder to me that, like, you know, even here in town where ostensibly Portland is a biking metropolis, it's a lovely place to ride a bike, weird things can happen. So good to know. Be careful out there, everybody. It's not necessarily always friendly streets. So
can I tell you my friendly street story?
Please do.
Then?
Please do. I think we need some of that to walk the taste out.
Yeah, let's uplift it. So while I was riding down here this evening, I have this tendency, I don't even realize that I'm doing it, that I'll sing to myself as I'm riding my bike somewhere.
It's kind of endearing.
Yeah. Thank you. I'd like to think so.
Just Sir Mix a lot the whole way.
Well, sometimes.
Okay.
Baby Got Back.
Exactly.
You know, it does. It's on repeat in my head occasionally, along with No Diggity and all those other great 90s
exactly.
jams.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it happened to be Call Your Girlfriend by Robin, another favorite. And it was one of those times that I didn't really realize I was singing it until there was this guy that was like right behind me on 7th that was singing it with me.
Like on a bike also?
Yes, on a bike also. And I'm like, oh my God. This is like a movie moment. If I weren't already in a relationship, like I would be like imagining all the ways we're supposed to fall in love.
And you would both cast the bikes aside and do like a dance number.
Exactly.
And you would ride
I'd
off together.
I'd be like,
together.
I am your girlfriend.
And then you could chase people with U-locks together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That'd be like the circle closing down on you like on Porky Pig or something like that.
Exactly.
That's all, folks. Just U-locks from here on out.
U-locks and Robin.
That's it. That's lovely. I'm glad that you sing on your bike because I feel like more people should do that. I spent so much time riding with earbuds in over the past several years because that's like my time to catch up on podcasts and things. But I find that occasionally if I go without, it's really nice because like there are real sounds in the actual world.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
It's one of my favorite things about biking is conversing with people.
Seriously, here's our call to action this week. If you find you're spending too much time with earbuds in your ears, take them the fuck out. Turn off the music. Turn off the digital noise. Go out and listen to the world for a while. Listen to the wind in your ears. It's going to feel good.
Or channel your inner Robin.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, go out and do it, folks. We have the Team Sincerity ride on President's Day. It's the worst President's Day ride, or no, the worst President's ride ever. So imagine like your least favorite president, and then just kind of hold that in mind. We're not really going to do anything with that, but but it ties it in. And it's President's Day, so we're going to Washington State, 50 miles, pretty easy ride. If you live here in town, you can join us. We started the Bipartisan Cafe on President's Day, and that's next Monday. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
We even have to come in here and do a show afterwards, I think. Yeah, I think the last thing was just if you folks listen to the show, like the show, we could use a little more financial help. We're so close to being in the black now. And I really appreciate I think there were two folks that stepped on this week to help out. So thank you so much. It means a lot. And we certainly couldn't do what we do without your support. And if you can't afford it, forget it. Don't worry about it. It's not that big of a deal. But if you can, like if you got $2 kicking around in your pocket and you'd like to send it our way, we would love that. And we'll send you stickers and we might even give you a call. I talked to new donor Andy on some weeknight last week and we had a good conversation. It was fun to meet him. So I could call you too. And really, if you want me to call you and you can't afford it, let me know. I'll just call you anyways. So yeah. Well, Brian, let's talk about Bike Index.
Let's do that.
You've started a thing here.
Yeah, it's funny. I started a thing a long time ago, actually. I used to run a website called Stolen Bicycle Registry. Which,
okay.
As you can imagine, I'll give you one guess.
What did it do?
It was a registry for stolen bicycles. Okay. Thank you for asking.
That's such a creative name.
Yeah, I know. It took me a long time, trust me. And I always focused on I always found that the stolen part was the interesting part. That's where you get to like chase thieves and deal with people and hear about all these crazy crime trends and a lot of really interesting work to be done there. And it was just me. I was just one guy. I sort of started as a lark. It was sort of a side project that I started. I used to work for the University of Arizona in Tucson.
Oh.
I had just a stupid amount of bikes stolen while I was there. It was I was poor. I had, you know, high crime neighborhood. Not allowed to bring the bikes in. So I just had a bike ripped like every, you know, like clockwork.
Not allowed to bring the bikes into the
dorms. Not allowed to bring into the dorms, into the buildings, it was a pretty bad mix. It's
kinda
really
sucks.
It's a really cycle friendly town. They're really pro bikes. There's tons of bike there. It's, you know, it's very, but just at the time it was terrible. If you actually wanted to keep anything safe. So I had them stolen. I had the stolen locked. I was taking a shower once and somebody came into my house and robbed me and took the bike.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So I all these like terrible, terrible, terrible stories. And I was a computer science guy at the time, and it was like right about the time that the web was getting big and like mobile sucked, but mobile was getting there. You could sort of see like, hey, wouldn't it be great if? And I started talking to a bunch of people. I talked to like the campus cops and I talked to a lot of city people, and like none of these databases talk to each other. And mm-hmm. I'm a computer science guy.
Yeah.
So you look at this and you go, okay, well, that's stupid. Somebody's got to fix that. Let's roll something out and see if it works. So I'm just some schmuck in my 20s, like, I'm going to save the world, you know, I'm going to start this website, and I'm going to pass out a bunch of business cards, and I'm going to publicize it, and I'm going to see what's happened. And, like, the first week, you know, two bikes came back. And that was just me, like, walking around handing out business cards to local bike shops. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, this actually works.
So two bikes came back, like, to their owners.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because shops, once, and, like, the sort of core idea was there's all this information that we collect, that it just goes into a black hole. It just goes into a bucket. It just goes into a police report that nobody reads ever again. Like, no one cares. The people who actually care have no access to that information.
Sure.
So riders, bike shops, organizations, you know, guys like me, guys like you, just people who have a vested interest in, like, looking out for stolen bikes.
Yeah.
So the idea was, okay, let's at least give them the most basic thing, serial number, stolen, yes or no. Let's give them the ability to run that, and it totally works. You know, big shocker. Woo, it's not like rocket science behind
this. Like, if you
this.
Keep track of data, eventually you will know things about
funny
other
thing,
things.
Writing stuff down and showing other people is actually really, you know, easy to do and gets a lot of bike specs. So I ran this for a long, long, long time, again, focusing only on the stolen. And it was great. I mean, traffic always went up, users always went up, recoveries always went up, and it was always a sideline thing. I have a pretty intense series of day jobs, and I sort of always kept the bikes thing on the side, but it just kept growing. I can't, you know, I could not ignore it. It just kept going up and up and up and up. And then Seth Herr started the Bike Index. He ran bike shops out of Chicago for a long time, and he sort of saw the other end of the equation. He's like, I'm selling all these bikes. There's no system to keep track of who bought what. We're literally like writing stuff down on paper and three-ring binders and opening Excel sheets and like, just kill me, right? This is just stupid, right? Like, he's fielding calls from people 4 years later, like, I came in January and you sold me a red bike. Like, ah, damn it. Like,
so there's like, got to be an easier way to get
right?
all this information.
This is, again, no-brainer stupid stuff. This is like the easiest application in the world. So he ran a really successful Kickstarter that said, hey, I wrote this thing. I want to make, you know, the only way this works is to make it really big. Can you help me make it really big? And he Kickstarted tons and tons of money. And at the time, I was like, God damn it. You know, who's this guy? Who's this guy? And how the hell did he get this slick video? And like, you know, here I am slaving away at my day job. And he puts out a Kickstarter video. So he did a victory lap, came through Portland. Super awesome guy. He's amazing. Stayed with me for a couple of days. Did a lot of promotion around town. And we sat down and talked and just clicked. Like we just two guys working on exactly the same problem, just from two slightly different angles.
Nice.
So I was like, look, you've got the time and the money and the chops to like bring the website up. I've got let me just run Stolen Bike Ops. You can run everything else, and it's like chocolate and peanut butter. You know, it just and the minute we integrated, the minute we sort of started working together, it just everything just it's like we ripped the lid off. Recoveries, emails, traffic, it just everything gelled. It was one of those crazy moments where everyone went, oh God, what have we done? Like, now, you know, oh boy, now it's, you know, watching the numbers climb up and sort of seeing. We're doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Like we wrote a Twitter bot, right? Like if you want to know, part of our problem is like the people that want to have access to the information, what's the fastest way we can let you like run a serial number? Like if you're going to go meet some dude on Craigslist and you want to be sort of surreptitious about it, like what's the fastest, easiest thing we can, you know, without you like whipping out a phone, opening a website, putting in your user pat? No, you tweet a serial number at is it stolen? And it comes back yay or no, you know, yes or no. And if it's a yes, it sends you a link to the bike and you can get a hold of the person. So that's just like one of the one-off things we just banged out in one day. I was like, oh, what the hell? Let's put it on Twitter. Let's see who uses it.
So that's like
and that's live?
Yeah. Man, you can do it right now. So all these little, all the stuff that have sort of been cast aside that I never really had time to focus on. Once we sort of gelled together, it was like, great. You're running this 50%. I'm running this 50%. And it's just totally blown up since then. We get a lot of bikes back. We're super active on social media. We're super active here in Portland. We run Bike Portland stolen bike listings, for example.
Right. That's integrated into Bike Index?
Yeah. So we actually wrote a WordPress plugin. So there's all these amazing blogs like IndieCog, Tucson Velo, Seattle Bike Blog. We're working with one, Go Bike Buffalo. Couple that I'm not going to name because we haven't turned them on yet. And the Bike Portland. I mean, it's really easy. You have these communities that have tons and tons of eyeballs and people that are really active and want to keep an eye out for these bikes, but they just have zero tools, have nothing to do it with. So it's free. I install a couple a week and I just say, give me 15 minutes and your password and I'll do the rest.
Okay. And is this a national or international registry?
We have guys, it's going to be, we have guys that want us to like translate it into German, translate it into Spanish. We're, you know, we have a number of volunteers and people that are trying to help out. And it's just a matter of like, okay, you know, puedes escribir las partes, like I don't know how to do it, make the words right.
Sure.
Right now it's primarily US, but we do have a lot of, I mean, we have registrations in almost, you know, tons and tons of countries, but right now it's like US, Canada.
So is this cross-platform? Like if my bike in Portland got stolen, could I look for it in Tucson?
Yeah. That's kind of the whole, and that's why it works, because no cop systems do that. Nobody else does this. There are no systems out there talk to each other, and it's that sort of stupid balkanization of, and that's what really sort of blew me away is, you know, being totally ignorant about this. When I started looking at it, I thought, oh, surely if my bike gets stolen on campus, you know, if some city cop, you know, picks it up and runs it and he'll get a hit. Oh, hell no. No. Like, you ignorant fool. That's not how it works, right?
Nobody cares.
Not only that, but like, you know, we both have our separate systems. They don't talk to each other. Like, yeah. One of them doesn't even work. You know, one of them was written in the 70s. Mm-hmm. It's like turning over logs in the forest. You know, you just, the more you start looking into it, you're just, oh, Jesus, this is a mess. You know, what are we going to do?
Right. So even if people do care, they don't know where to
go. Yeah. And we've identified, like, and that's, I mean, that's sort of what we're working on really, really closely. All these existing systems that you think are great. Like, if you get robbed right now, someone breaks into your house and takes your bikes, more often than not, they're going to push you towards, like, online reporting. Mm-hmm. They say, hey, you know, Portland's got this great system. We don't have to send a cop out. It's, you know, you can use it for insurance purposes. Like, go fill out this online thing. I hate to tell you this. That does almost zero good. It gets, for insurance purposes, great. But the truth of the matter is in the, you know, for up to like 12 days, if a cop catches some tweaker on your bike at 4 o'clock in the morning, you think, surely if he runs this number, I've submitted the, no, it doesn't pop up. And it's just this sort of stupid technological, like it has to go through this process and there's a sort of a sign off thing, but like, nobody tells you that. Nobody tells you like, hey, there's, you know, you've done everything we've told you to, but like, no one's looking for this.
Right.
So our shtick, if we had a shtick, you know, is we take all that information, we make it free, we make it fast, we give it to everybody who wants to get at it. And it's just, it's not like, you know, personal info. It's just like, hey, do you know about this serial number? Yes or no. Is it stolen? Yes or no. If it is, who do you talk to? Well, ask the bike index guys. We'll get in touch with the owner. That model just works, and it's the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
We have bike shops here in Portland that just keep Jonathan's, Bike Portland stolen bike listings up in the background. You can also just whip out your phone and run a number. It takes like 7 seconds. It's ridiculous. So
okay.
Portland, of course, huge biking community. It's awesome. San Francisco also has they're a little bit ahead. So that's sort of the model we're trying to roll up here. So we have some really, really tech-savvy community people. We have some really, really sort of awesome, amazing police officers that actually, they're riders. They sort of get technology. They sort of see where there are these shortcomings, and they sort of know that, if we did some really simple things, we're going to get a lot more bikes back. And we also have, guys like us that have put the technology out there. And then some city people who sprinkle some resources here and there and say, you're going to work on this for a little bit. And that model totally works. It's such a no-brainer. It's low cost. It's just giving people access to these really basic tools that everybody wants to use anyway.
It's like potato salad is a really nice, low-cost sort of thing.
Exactly.
And it just takes like 3 or 4 different things.
Exactly. And
a little bit of nutmeg on top.
Exactly. Stick it in the fridge for 2.5 hours. Let it gel.
Can I ask the business owner question?
Yeah.
Please do. Just in case no one knows, this is Gladys from Gladys Bikes.
Leah, you own Gladys Bikes.
I own
Gladys Pikes.
Part of the reason I asked you to host tonight is because you've had some experience with theft. But ask your shop end question.
Yes. Well, not even shop end, so much as broader business. Is Bike Index a business or is it a service?
So we're actually, we're a benefit corp.
Okay.
And that's sort of what delineates us from some others out there.
You're both.
Yeah. Oh, and that's a great thing about being a 503B. It's like you're allowed to do businessy things. You just have to do it for the public good.
Okay.
And that's kind of what we're shooting for. Like nobody's getting rich over here.
Totally.
It's an interesting question. That's what's funny. People always like, oh, well, you're a startup. It's like, oh, you're this. I'm like, well, no, I'm just some dude, right? I wasn't an LLC. I just ran a damn website. Like I'm not really gunning for anything. I just want to get people's bikes back. Like, somebody asked me, why you ran this since the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, why the hell would you do this? You're not making any money on it. And
he's going to have a chop shop.
Yeah. I have an amazing day job, but I do some really interesting things, but it's not like the things that I'm doing really provide a lot of, it's not like I'm saving kittens or anything. It's IT stuff. It's really interesting. It's really engaging, but, it's not like you're really making the world a better place.
Yeah, the kittens are the stolen bikes.
Yeah, exactly. And with this, it's amazing. The recoveries we get just blow my mind. Like, the current record's 10 years, and it went from Washington to North Carolina.
Wow.
We get people's bikes back where I get these emails that I had this crappy blue Schwinn, value is like $75, but it was my mom's bike, and it was my mom's bike, and I have a kid, and it's going to be her bike, and some effort took it.
Mm-hmm.
I want the bike back, and we get it back. And it's like, it's mind blowing.
We
got one back. We actually got a story back today from a guy that he had it stolen here in Portland, and it popped up on Craigslist, of course. And somebody flagged it. He was in Rhode Island. His friends went and got the damn thing back for him.
In Rhode Island?
In Portland.
Oh, right. He's in Rhode Island.
I can read you this email. It's a great email. He actually wrote a blog post. I tweeted about it today.
Yeah. Let me make a note of that.
This is the bike I rode from Portland to New Orleans and then up to Rhode Island. And then I came back to Portland. This bike's been with me longer than, anything else in my life. And some bastard took it. Value-wise, I could take an insurance claim, but I want the bike.
Right.
I want the bike.
Like, the bike has a sentimental place. And I'm sure, Leah, you have some of those in your life. You have bikes that mean more than their stated value.
Well, and I imagine, too, as you're talking about it, that those bikes are, I don't know if easier to find is the way to put it. So when my shop got broken into, one of the difficulties in finding the bikes was I didn't want to, invite people to go out and look for them, vigilante justice style. Because I'm like, realistically, these aren't entirely unique bikes. Other people are riding them. And, what would be your suggestions for someone that has, a new stock bicycle? Because those just aren't as easy to...
The thing we always tell people, record the serial, the weird thing that gets a lot of bikes back that people don't realize is, tell me about the weird sticker you have on it. We got one back... I can curse on podcast, right?
Yes, you can.
There's a woman who had a black Surly stolen it, and she had no cereal. She had nothing. She's like, it's got a fuck Monsanto sticker on the down tube.
Twenty
days later, someone's like, hey, I found your damn bike. How do I know? It's got the fuck Monsanto. And by the way, fuck those guys. It scratches and dings and all these little weird specific components that you put on it. we flagged one on Craigslist where the guy had like one tiny little gold component. It was his weird little signature flavor. And the cop's like, well, how do you know this is your bike? Before we send somebody out there, I'm not going to waste our time. It's like, there's nobody else that has this one damn gold component. Look at the picture. We had another one out of California that the guy obviously chopped the hell out of it. Different tires, different seat, different components, different everything. But the guy had this one very particular scratch. He screwed up his paint job, basically, and he was super pissed off about it. And he had taken a picture like, I am super pissed off about this scratch I put on my bike. Sure enough, some dude puts it on Craigslist, of course, and he sees this scratch. And he's like, hey, I would really like it if you sent me some in-depth, you know, some closer pictures. It totally verifies that it's a scratch. And the cop's like, yeah, we'll take it. Let's do it. Like, that's enough for us.
You know? There you go.
So there's all this stuff about, you know, even beyond the serial number, even beyond the stock bikes, if you do something weird to it, if you stick a sticker on it, if you scratch it, if you've customized it, that'll work. Totally work.
So you have this data on the bike, and you've put it into bikeindex.com because you're smart.
Org.
It's a benefit corporation.
That's right.
Excuse me.
It's
bikeindex.org. Let's say that again in unison.
On three.
Bikeindex.org. There we go. Thank you. That's going to help me in the future. So we get that. We get all that info put up there, and we find the bike on Craigslist. What happens after that?
Craigslist is that's a really long discussion. what happens? I mean, I have a playbook right now, and I'm going to omit some of this because not to give away the tricks. But so what? I mean, I get probably four of these emails a day, at the least. Hi, had my bike stolen. Some dude found it on Craigslist. Now what?
You're the guy.
Yeah, right. Nope. And it sort of depends on jurisdiction. It sort of depends on like, okay, here's a playbook. Can you do anything to make sure it's 100% yours? Can you fake them into sending you more info? Like, call the cops right now and try to get them engaged. If not, you know, do you have four friends? you get put in this really weird position where the cops are like, you know, most cops, I hate to generalize it. It really differs by department. Some of them are amazing. Portland has some really amazing guys that'll just like, yeah, F it. Let's go get these guys. It puts you in a weird situation because they're basically going to say like, well, we're not going to do anything unless you're like totally 100% sure, right? We don't want to go spend a bunch of time and a bunch of resources chasing some dude.
Okay, so if like, you're not sure, it's like
if
a
you're not,
error.
Yeah, it's sort of a crapshoot. But then you know, even if you are 100% sure, which has often happened, they're like, sorry, we just can't right now. We're hella busy, right? We have you know guys with guns and guys on meth and shit's on fire. You know, you're on your own,
right?
But we don't advocate you do anything, and if you do anything, we warned you. You know, don't confront this person. Don't. They put you in this weird position. It's like, well, yeah, it's yours. Yeah, it's bad. It's stolen, but we're not going to help you. You know, that then them's the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. I mean, I have this conversation with people. It's like, look, you know, a lot of people have to have this decision making moments where it's like, okay, you know, is it worth possibly getting shanked in the lungs with a rusty screwdriver by some meth head to get my bike back? And most people say, no, I'll take the loss. And a lot of people are like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Let's get four friends. Let's get, you know, put you in the bushes. The playbook we're telling people now, which has actually worked out quite well, is if you're 100% sure and you engage the cops and they say, sorry, you know, today's just the worst possible day. We can't do it. Like, you know, reasons. Sorry, we can't do it for reasons.
Stuff's happening.
The playbook what we started telling people is, so you set up a meet. Try to make it within like a quarter mile of a police station. 2 hours before you meet this guy, walk into the police station, report in hand, say, hi, I'm going to meet this guy who has my stolen bike. I tried to engage you guys for help. You said no. I'm still going to meet this guy, and here are my four friends. I would really love a phone number in case something goes wrong to call you guys. Thank you. Bye. And it sort of puts the onus on them. Like, here you are in person, standing in their office.
About to light a fire. Do you
want to help us?
Okay.
That sucks, and a lot of people won't ever get to that part, that sort of, again, a lot of people say, no, it's not worth it.
Okay, yeah.
And I cracked the joke about the rusty screwdriver. That actually happened to the Seattle bike blog.
I was going
to
say, this is like a thing that could actually happen.
Story.
Yeah, he pulled a screwdriver on him and took a swing. I mean, it was terrible. It sucks because there's no stock playbook that I give people. It sort of depends like, okay, well, where are you? Well, okay, well, if you're in this one jurisdiction, you can call this one guy, who cares? Or you can, you know, engage. It's sort of this, there's no flow chart for it.
Do you know a guy with a baseball bat?
Yeah. Right.
And so that's the weird thing. I was kind of curious about just like the whole vigilante thing, because there's been a spate of coverage on bike theft. There was the whole bike theft summit, which you were there. I was not. I wanted to go, but I think I had something else on the calendar. I couldn't
move
around.
You missed a good time.
Indeed. There's been some debate in Bike Portland in the comment sections and between people who care in various nooks and crannies of culture about you know, how much vigilantism is appropriate.
Yeah.
How do you make that call? And
I think,
do you have a thought on that?
I have many thoughts on that. It's a totally valid it's a totally valid thing to have this argument. The thing that I always bring up is, like, you know, people sort of marginalize bike theft. It's like, oh, you know, you left your bike on the street, somebody cut the lock off, that's bike theft. And that's actually not what's happening. The majority of the bike thefts that we're getting are people break into your house, take the bike. People break into your car, take the bike. People, you know, it's 3 a.m. Some dude creeps into your backyard, gets on your front porch, or, you know, lets himself in your house. They're usually parts of larger crimes. So it's like, yeah, bike theft is bad, but like homeboy creeping around your backyard at 3 a.m. is even worse, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys are repeat guys or repeat drug guys. It's to sort of like, well, it's just bike theft. You know, you need to really sort of advocate this sort of like nuclear response. It's like, well, it's actually a lot more than just bike theft, guys, especially in Portland.
Like, this is tied into a larger crime.
It's always, I mean,
if not a syndicate, at least.
It's always drugs. Drugs. Math. Like, okay. Math with a side of meth. It's the same stupid equation. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people do get turned off by the sort of vigilantism, rhetoric that gets thrown around. But at the same time, you know, talk to me after your fifth bike has been taken, and four of them were from your house, and they also robbed your garage, and they also, I mean, and. Like, we have a guy in San Diego that we got his bike back through. We do a lot of work with, like, pawn systems, mm-hmm. which is also a whole other weird discussion. But
which is supposed to be on the level, but
yeah, I mean, it's varies wildly by jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So we found his bike. Somebody took it to a pawn shop. Pawn shop ran the number, called him up, said, hey, got your bike. So he called me days later. He's like, look, I didn't put this in my report, and I didn't want to make this part of the deal. But, like, when that bike got taken, I got the hell beat out of me. It was part of a larger assault. The bike was a minor part of this crime. So it's great to have the bike back. What's better is that when this guy pawned the bike, they do fingerprint, they do video. There's all these sort of identification type things. So he's like, having the bikes back is great, but it's better that I now have a lead on the guys that put me in the hospital.
Like, it builds a case for the prosecution.
Precisely. I mean,
at some point.
The cops is like, is this the guy? Yes. Okay, well, let's go get the guy. Like, okay. You know, to sort of minimize it as, well, you can't, you know, advocate vigilantism because it's just like a $200 bike. Well, no. I mean, it's usually a lot bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
Much, much bigger than that.
I was curious, Leigh, did you have thoughts when your shop was broken into? Did you have vigilantism thoughts?
No.
You had leads as well, right?
Fewer leads, but also, like, to my question before about new bikes, they were stock bikes that, you know, were on the floor for sale. So they had nothing unique about them.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. So sending people out to look for them would have been like, look for anyone that has this one type of Bianchi that there are hundreds of.
Yeah, but at the same time, if it's 4 o'clock in the morning and somebody catches somebody downtown that's got 17 heroin arrests and he's riding one of those brand new stock bikes, don't you want that serial number in a system that somebody can look at?
Oh, no, I totally want the serial number. But what I'm talking about more is like the vigilante justice, I think, that we're talking about in terms of wanting to look for the bikes. Obviously, I want them back, but
And I would argue, yeah. I mean, we do a lot of this on Twitter. Like, so if your bike gets stolen in Portland or any other, like, 15-odd cities and you register it, it goes out to a city-specific Twitter feed. And say, here's a picture of the bike, here's the color, here's the distinguishing characteristics. And that works. It totally works.
Mm-hmm.
However, you want to argue whether or not it is good or bad to have people out there, like, looking for this one particular thing, it totally works, and we have the numbers to show it. And it's usually a lot of situations you aren't entirely sure about. A lot of it is like, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. We just came out of a bar in, you know, Detroit, or so some dude's trying to sell me a bike. It's $25. Yeah, I know it's stolen. Yeah, I'm going to buy it for $25 to get it back to the person. How am I going to do it? I saw it on Twitter. So there's a lot of situations that probably go beyond some of the normal situations.
Oh, totally. And I think like in general, it's totally worth it to look for him. I think just working at a bike shop, I think the side that I get to see of it more often is people being reunited with their bikes.
Right.
I think I hear far more good stories about people having them stolen and finding them back, whether it be a bike shop found them and
right.
just felt like the situation wasn't quite right with the person bringing it in, or they randomly saw it on the street, or
right.
a friend of theirs found it. I think
we actually get a huge number of people who buy them online on Craigslist, of course,
mm-hmm.
because Craigslist, and then take them home. Like, you know what? This is a $2,000 bike. I got it for $400. Something's wrong. And then they start searching, and then they find the listing, and then they get in touch with the guy, and 98% of them eat the money. And they just give it back. They just say,
good
look,
people.
Look, I've had four stolen myself. This is far more worth it to me for the story and for the karma. Take it.
Right.
Almost,
and that's some good karma.
Yeah. I mean, nobody. And we're like, some of them are significant, like $1,000 plus. Most bike people will take that loss and say, you know, I knew something was hinky about this to begin with. Like, so the good part is something else that we do is we collect information on bad actors. So say you do have a bad transaction with somebody, we watch for them in the future. So we this is sort of a new thing that we do, and I'm going to omit some details, but it's one of those things that, like, if you buy a bike on Craigslist from someone and say, hey, turns out it was stolen, if that guy ever pops up again, we're going to be looking at his listings and we're going to be tracking him no matter what system he's on.
Gotcha.
And that also is extremely fruitful. And it's all, there's, I mean, I could, there's a guy in Santa Cruz that, like, I mean, half of what this guy puts online, we've managed to match. And whether or not somebody goes down and tries to get it back is another question. But we're on our, like, fifth bike from this guy.
It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
So do you have, I mean, do you have hypotheses about, like, how these, like, if they're rings of crime work, or, like are there networks? Is there an underground railroad for stolen bikes?
Honestly, it's so all over the board.
Yeah.
It's like your random schmuck who just sees an opportunity, and then there's guys who, like, rent U-Haul. I mean, Reed just did a bait bike, like, a month ago.
I read about this. Reed College.
Yeah, right.
They put a GPS locator inside of a bike.
Yeah.
Then they make it easy to steal, right?
Right. They just knew that, like, when kids go away, it goes through the roof. So we're just going to put a couple out there, and, of course, one's going to get taken.
Right.
So it got taken, and then immediately started doing 65 miles an hour south. So
the bikes don't do that usually.
Exactly. So it was two guys in a U-Haul that had just been on a total robbery spree. So they pull these guys over, and that's full of, I mean, they robbed a couple of houses. It was more than the bikes. And they were obviously, I mean, when you're renting a U-Haul, you're sort of operating at a higher level than most people.
Right. This is not just a crime of opportunity.
No, not at all.
It's a very big opportunity.
No. I mean, we tracked one to, this guy had it stolen in San Francisco, and it popped up in effing Tokyo.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, no shit, right? Like,
okay.
I asked him, like, look, lots of bikes look alike. And he's like, no,
wow.
Dude. And he systematically went down all these, and it was for sale.
That's the one.
You know, he's like, there's this one. This is what I do for a living. There's one of these bikes in the universe that has every characteristic, has every alteration I made. It has every scratch. It has every ding. Like, that's my goddamn bike.
Yeah.
I'm not really going to fly to Tokyo to get it back, but it means someone took it, you know,
right,
someone
right.
took the thing to Tokyo.
That's fascinating.
So it honestly runs again. There's, I wish I had, like, solid numbers on it. It's everything from, like, idiot opportunists to guys who are just straight up robbers, just thieves. You know, not necessarily bikes. They're just, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a shop in San Francisco that got hit really hard. And I'm blanking on their name, but it was they sell Bromptons, and, you know, 65 of them cleared out in one robbery. And this is a professional robbery. These are guys who, like, this is what they do.
If there were no moral problems with that, I would love to get 65 Bromptons. That
exactly,
would be, like,
exactly.
A lovely situation to be in. But
yeah. So, I mean, and what's crazy is they had security cameras. They had, I mean, everything. They were popping up online, on Craigslist, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They started, like, trickling out into the market. And
so Craigslist, where else does it show up online?
Man, eBay. We've had some amazing recoveries off eBay.
Okay.
There's a guy in Seattle that actually we had flagged months before, and nobody did anything about. And then they raided his house. He's a fence. He was trading drugs for stolen goods. Basically.
Okay. A fence being, like, a closed space in which
they popped
bad
this guy
happens.
Because someone had an iPad stolen, and they had to find my iPad app.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And when they finally tracked it, they're like, oh, yeah, we've been waiting for this guy.
You know? Yeah.
Like, so they showed up, and they cleared out his whole house. He had a whole effing house. They had to get, like, two storage trailers to pull all this stuff away.
He just lived among stolen goods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's all they did.
I'm just excited that I actually heard the term fence in real life. I only know it from Law & Order.
Yes.
It's
yes.
a real thing.
No, it's definitely a real thing. It's totally a real thing.
Is there any sort of – oh, man. Like the next Law and Order spinoff, Law and Order, one less SUV. No, there's nothing there.
You're trying to reach for a bike joke here, right?
I am reaching for a bike joke.
I applaud
you. I think you just got to be straightforward, like Law and Order. Bikes.
Bikes.
Bike theft unit.
BTU.
Yeah,
BTU.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I was also curious from both of you. There's been some talk too about the issue of the homeless community in Portland as it relates to stolen bikes. One of the big vigilantism pushes was on that article that Jonathan posted after he had his bike stolen, got it brought back, and then shortly after that, there's some folks living on one of the multi-use paths here in town that had what was it? Bike parts spill out of homeless encampment, I think, or something like that.
And they identified a couple that were stolen
right.
at that encampment. I mean,
right.
Yeah. Let's not omit that part.
So, yes, I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
It's a super sensitive subject, and I get that it's a super sensitive subject. It's interesting. Like, when Jonathan was actually chasing his, you know, so it got stolen. He goes around looking for it. He finds the guy with his bike. He finds the guy, you know, with other bikes. He finds a guy that has actually been arrested for bike theft multiple times. and then also still gives him the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
And goes, he did this on Twitter. And,
incredibly generous.
You know, and I'm just like just banging my head on the wall. Like, what does it take, right? You know, you literally found the guy with your stolen thing. This is what he does. There's no way. Why even engage in the exercise? There's no question here, right? This is the guy who took your bike, the end. And I get that. But I also get that, you know, a lot of people's perception, and this actually comes up a lot with, I'm on Next. Do you guys use Nextdoor?
Yes. Nextdoor. So, are you familiar with that one, Leo?
I am.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's like the social network for neighbors.
Yeah.
So and you can like, listen to all your neighbors bitch and complain about what
and
happens.
And it's localized. So like your discussions are only, it's like a, you know, yeah. like a 6-block mm-hmm. radius.
It's better than that. I should be more generous. I'm sorry.
So there's a lot of discussion on Nextdoor about this, generally around like package theft. You know, like a lot of you order something from Amazon and it shows up on your front porch.
You and I might live in the same neighborhood.
Yeah. We actually might. I mean, it's in all of them now. And what is sort of shocked people is that, so a lot of these package thefts have actually been caught. There's a lot of people that do like drop cams, security cameras. And you know, this sort of knee jerk response of like, oh, it's these, you know, these goddamn like junkie heroin kids that are running around and, you know, bikes are stealing. And then they pull the footage and it's like, you know, 22-year-old like white chick in a Honda Civic or like a Lexus or like, it's totally not the demographic that you would expect.
Stereotype breaks.
Totally stereotypical breaks. And then watching the sort of like weird cognitive dissonance that occurs in these discussions online where people are like, well, you know, I never said.
So but that's my daughter.
Yeah, exactly. So I totally get that. I understand that, you know, you probably more so here than anywhere else, you need to give people the benefit of the doubt. I mean, one of the Jonathan actually opened the whole Bike Theft Summit with a written statement from someone that works with the homeless saying, look, you know, the last thing we want to see happen is a sort of demonization of, you know, there's a much bigger problem. But like Portland, man, I mean, Portland has so raging drug problem, raging low-level theft, smash and grabs, you know, home break-ins. You start looking at the numbers and it's bananas. There's a lot of sort of like low-level stuff going on here, which basically just points to a massive out-of-control problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, talk to anybody and it's a drug. It's all drugs. Drugs. And you know, make of that what you will. So while I hear where people are coming from, it's hard to bike to work every day past 5 chop shops that are by the spring water, that are down under the Esplanade, that are by the Hawthorne Bridge, that are exactly in the same spot. We can go right now and go talk to Jonathan's bike thieves because that guy is there right now chopping bikes. You know, there's guys that I go on runs. I was training for a half marathon that I did, and I would just go out and I would take like 2 or 3 laps around the Esplanade. And as I was doing this, I'd see some kid with a $5,000 carbon fiber bike, and I'd take a picture of it, and I'd just like, okay, and I'd come back and I'd run it, and it wouldn't be in the registry, and I would check an hour later, and someone had registered it,
mm-hmm.
and that happened on multiple occasions.
Right, and it seems like there's some nuance between saying like, these are things you don't usually see together, and this guy is a bike thief. Like you can.
It's gotten so bad here. They are publishing mugshots, and this is something that PPP did, and it's a great thing to do. That you know, they just took the 10 most worst offenders and took the mugshots, sent them to bike shops, and said, "Do not deal with these guys." That's great. You know, that's not infringing on anybody's anything. These are guys that, you know, 20, 25 plus easy offenses. I see absolutely no problem with that.
Right. Well, what we're talking about here tonight is the fact that information can help people get the straight story on what's happening. Like, it's one thing to say, oh, homeless people are all bike thieves. We're going to go down and take all their parts back and you lock justice, et cetera. Like, right. That's one way to go about it. The other way is like what you're advocating with Bike Index is like we have all these ways to get information in. Let's take all these pieces of information and put together a whole picture. And when you have that whole picture, then you can make informed decisions.
Right. And there's option 3, which is like, you know, your option 3 is you took my bike. I don't care who you are. If I see you on it, you're dead. You know, you're a dead man.
Like, right. And we don't have, of course, here on the podcast.
We don't advocate death.
Don't kill anybody. That is wrong. Do not kill someone.
I am merely expressing what I hear, you know, 30, 40 times a day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and then again, it's the sure, swift hand of justice, I suppose. Like, if you know, it's the classic story, though. I think you alluded to the one in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard, I think one of my wife's friends actually executed a steal back.
Yeah.
Where, like, if you are, as you said, 100% certain this is your bike, it could not be
And here's the thing about that. And, like, so I talked to a cop once, and he's like, so we actually traced one of these back. It got stolen on Monday. We got it back on a Friday. And in those 5 days, it passed through 8 different guys. You know, stolen bikes are basically currency. They're just another X, you know, item of value X that you can trade for other things.
There's pictures of presidents and jewelry.
Precisely.
Yeah.
That's oddly specific. it's entirely possible that, you know, and this happens all the time. And you know, you go, you want to buy a bike online. It's a great deal. You talk to this guy. It's like, oh, you know, I bought it at a flea market. I bought it, you know, from some dude. And he literally has no idea what he's doing is a bad thing. So there is, we do give people a lot of the benefit of the doubt. Because, again, he could be that sixth or seventh guy. You know, we have a lot of guys that just go to flea markets and guys, you know, people buy them off police auctions. There's a lot of legitimate reasons that right. you want to be selling a bike for $500 and it's worth 10 times that online.
Sure. And know? A lot of people that would be really excited, so like, oh, hey, I got a great deal on a bike. Now I'm riding
so
it.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
What we tell people to do, say you're selling the bike and say I'm buying the bike and say I know it's my bike and I meet up with you. I say, hey, you know, this is an amazing bike. Why are you selling it? He's like, oh, yeah, it was my wife's bike, and she, you know, she just broke her leg, and she can't just give you some total bullshit story. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, now all bets are off. F you. You know, you're a liar, and I'm calling you a liar, and my four friends are also calling you liars. Give me the bike.
This would be a case, I assume, where you just saw him leave a house that you know no one else lives in.
Yeah.
You see no wedding band on his finger. And
yeah, exactly. He's not 6'6".
You've been through his mail, so you know that there's no one else there.
But
I kid.
We run into these situations. We run into these situations all the time where it's like, ask them the question. Call them out and say, well, that's funny. This is my bike. And I'm, you know, here's the serial number. And I'm going to turn this bike upside down right now, and I'm going to read the serial number to you. You just lied to me, and I know you lied to me. Give me the bike.
Like, right.
So there's little litmus tests like that you can...
Calling the kettle black, as it were.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm. What if for a minute we imagined that people still have their bikes? And
Yes.
This is nice.
Yeah.
What a glorious place to go to.
We live in a world where people are still in love with their bicycles, riding them all the time. They're right in their garage.
The sun feels warm.
Moment's notice. What are suggestions for how to not get them stolen in the first place, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that a lot of people have different theories about that, and it's changing all the time as thieves, unfortunately, get better and better and better at their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a total arms race.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's cable locks. I don't know why we're still selling them. Don't use them. You stupid people. I mean, somebody cracked a joke that, like, Portland has a lot of Canadians that come down to visit, and they have this, like, dinky little cheap cable lock. I'm like, well, it's perfectly fine at home. It's like, oh, dear God, you know, don't do that here.
It's like a plastic combo lock.
It's basically dental floss, mm-hmm. You know, that they've already used. It does nothing.
Nothing here.
Right.
In BC, it does amazing things.
The one thing that's really surprising is the number of guys that are breaking into what are secured areas. Like, so, you know, like, the building I work in downtown has a quote-unquote secured storage.
Okay.
So you get guys that just dress up in all the gear, take a big backpack, and have one of the big red cutter keys, and they just, you know, they get in that storage, and it's like open season.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks like, oh, my bike's totally safe. It's in the secured storage. No, it's like the easiest thing in the world to take that bike. Garages in your home, another one. Like, I talked to another cop once who were like, if you're a thief, like, garages are awesome, right? There's nobody there. There's tools. There's all this stuff in there. There's usually a car, and there's all this stuff that you can take, and then you can ride off on the bike.
All your expensive shit.
And it's usually, like, a building that no one's paying attention to, and you know, it's just, like, protected by a pane of glass. And so a lot of people are like, well, my bike's fine. It's in the garage. Well, you know, I'm sorry. It's not. It's the same thing with people that put them in the back of their cars. They'll smash the window and take the bike. So there's a lot of situations where, like, people totally think they're covered. They're totally fine.
Yeah. I knew a guy, actually, or met a guy who was on a bicycle tour down the West Coast, and he had gone from the Canadian border down to somewhere in Los Angeles, and his bike got stolen not when he was out in the wilderness somewhere, not when he was in any of the many towns that he had passed through on his tour, but when he put it in the back of a station wagon in Oakland and went somewhere, and then that was when his bike disappeared.
So what's your opinion then on, like, free locking a bike? So, like, if you were to, like, you lock, you know, your wheel to your frame while it's in the back of your car, do you think that that's a deterrent as you've seen it? No,
not at all.
Free locking is when you're just locking the bike to itself.
Yeah, locking it to itself.
Outside of the Plaid Pantry sometimes.
It helps, yeah. But we've had guys who, like, they'll cut trees down. So you'll lock to, like, a 4-inch, you know, mm-hmm. tree. They'll just take out the tree, and they'll go deal with the lock later. That's not, there's one that actually got registered this morning where they sawed through the bike that the bike was locked to.
Oh.
They sawed through the bike with the lesser value mm-hmm. in order to get to the bike with the higher value, and they took it away with a lock. So it's an okay step, but it's not really going to stop anybody, which is sad to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, one step at a time. So the best thing you can do for your bike then, I mean, it would be easy to declare it scorched earth, say everything's fucked.
Right.
Someday your bike is going to leave you. But what's the good news?
And that's actually what I tell people is like, look, so when they find us, it's like, hey, you filled out your police report, that's great. It's not going to do anything for you. I'm happy to tell you, in your town, there's like 5,000 people right now that are looking for this bike because we got it out on Twitter as they run a bike shop because they're in the cycling community because they run a pawn shop. Like, you've actually stumbled upon all the people who actually give a shit about this problem. Use this system. Tell your friends about it. Tell everybody you know about it. The more people you have with eyeballs looking for your bike in particular, the better. Like, we're going to do our part as hard as we can. But, I mean, Facebook and just circles of friends, especially in this town, or towns with really strong biking, you know, communities. Those eyeball, it's, they call it like the human search engine. You know, it's the best possible way to get stuff back. Period.
It's like Tinder for bikes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
There we go.
So it's like, yeah, I mean, it sucks that this thing happened, but the good news is like in this particular town or this other particular town, you have 5,000 friends that have got your back, including 40 shops and 22 pawn shops and, you know, all these cops and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And that is amazing because those numbers keep going up. And I love to tell people, like, you know, your odds are twice as good this year as they were last year.
Right. Well, that's good news.
Yeah, it's a great,
that is definitely good,
it's a great
news.
Thing to tell people. A
little more good news is the recent partnership with Spinlister.
Yeah,
because Spinlister, we've talked about, is the Airbnb for bikes.
Yes.
It's the basically like you want a bike, you can rent one.
Yeah,
because all these people have bikes in their garages. So you guys paired up with them and did a really exciting thing.
We did, yeah. Portland's a huge, as you might imagine, is a huge market for those guys.
There's, yeah,
we sort of joked when we rolled this out. So you get your bike stolen. It's 9 a.m. We talk to people all the time that are like, I'm screwed, right? Like, public transit doesn't want to go where I want to go. Cartagos are never here. Taxis are really expensive. I work a crazy late shift. Like, what the hell do I do? Well, then you whip out your phone. You get on Spinlister. Spinlister is actually fronting like the first $30 of your day's rental. They're basically giving you the first day for free.
Which is cool.
Which is amazing. And there's all sorts of crazy. There's like hundreds and hundreds of bikes. You can get like back Fiats. You can get tall bikes. And you can get, Dutch bikes. And you can get damn unicycles. And like... So yeah,
my tall bike's on there.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, not—it's not like sound. Wait, I don't think I should rent it to somebody right now because it needs to be fixed.
It needs to be fixed.
Yeah. I was gonna say, what are the insurance things?
They cover it all.
Really?
It's all covered. By
so if somebody
guys,
falls off my tall bike,
or steals it, or it gets stolen, or it breaks, it's covered in their system. So it's literally like you can go a couple hours from I'm totally screwed and I'm bikeless to I have a ride. It's from my neighbor. The money stays here.
I can use one.
I mean, the cash goes to your neighbors. They take a super tiny cut, and it's just, those are like exactly the awesome types of guys we want to be dealing
right.
with.
Right. Also, the bonus of Spinlister is that Airbnb currently requires you to get a city certified permit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Spinlister, no permit required.
Nope.
Just a bike you can rent.
Nope. And you can get, like I said, some absolutely crazy. So we actually I wanted to find the first guy that said, yeah, you know, screw it, let's get a tall bike.
Yeah, there like, we go. Yeah.
I had my bikes and I had my, like, you know, commuter stolen, but the good news is I got my first ride on a tall bike and it was amazing. You know?
Yeah.
And the Spinlister guys actually said they have a really interesting contingency of people who, that's how they do test rides. They know I'm looking at this particular model, this particular brand, this particular, but I want to go test ride one of these. How do you do it? Well, you go on Spinlister. Because their inventory is so freaking huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you were looking at a particular like Surly and you never touched, or like an all city space or something, and you didn't know anybody with them, bam, you know, $10.
Right.
Or even, you know, $0.
Fat bikes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
anything you want to try that you couldn't afford right away.
Yeah, that's a great deal. They're really cool guys. I actually have a bike on Spinlister as well.
Nice.
And it's I travel a lot for work, so I've had to turn down like my last three requests, which
is
unfortunate. But I'm looking forward to this summer.
There we go.
I can actually rent the thing out.
The time will come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you for coming in. And you got time to hang out and quickly go over some mail and news with us?
Sure.
Excellent. Again, tell us. Well, here. This is our thing for this week. Tell us what to do.
Go online right now for free. Register your bikes with bikeindex.org. Hopefully you'll never need us, but if you do, we'll totally be there for you. We got your back. We have tons of bike shops, thousands of users. We're in different cities. We're in different states. We're going to be international. We are the best place to go to if you ever want to get your stolen bike back.
That was really good.
In unison, bikeindex.
Bikeindex.org.
There we go. Fabulous. Leah, do you have notes there for the things?
I'm pulling up my notes right now,
sweet.
Brock.
If you want to throw me some headlines after I roll this headlines music, I will read some of that copy.
Headlines.
Awesome. Thank you.
Headlines music.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as it can into the morning light. night, pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight, pedal just as fast as we can into the nightlight, pedal just as fast.
What do we have first, Leah?
Oh, the first one up. Not surprising, but always painful to see. From the Washington Post, Portland is the only city gentrifying faster than D.C.
That's right. Thanks to Tim Mooney for sending this to us through the internet. In its February issue, Governing Magazine used census data to determine which neighborhoods are gentrifying in D.C. and in the 50 largest cities across the country and which neighborhoods could gentrify but haven't yet. Gentrification, of course, is when they take away the bars that you love and kick out all your friends, and then they replace them with people you don't know in places you can't afford. Portland, Oregon was the only city in the country to have a higher percentage of eligible census tracts gentrified than D.C., with 58.1% of its eligible tracts gentrifying. Minneapolis, Seattle, and Atlanta rounded out the top five, and we're not far behind D.C. So that's happening.
That's happening.
Anybody ever tracked like a brunch index, like brunch as an indicator of gentrification?
I bet those metrics are almost like one to one.
I bet that's out there.
Yeah, brunch is brunch is so cheap if you make it at home. Mm. Adele and I were at home this last weekend, and like we made brunch. I swear for like $1.50 a person, and it was filling. It was huge. Potatoes are cheap.
But you don't have someone walking around refilling your coffee.
That's true. It didn't come with a mimosa either. So there's that. Depends on what you want.
Life's hard when you do it at home. In other news, from BikePortland.org, Portland's low-car transportation web ranks 7th nationally.
A study says there's an infographic on the web page that the story comes from. You can check that out if you want. And there is Portland right there. A lot of cities are tied. Boston, Los Angeles, and New York are tied above Portland. And Denver, Minneapolis, San Diego, and Seattle are tied below. This is basically for the options, the number of options you have. So Portland has 9 services available and 17 service providers. Right above them, New York has the same number, 9 services, but 19 providers. And Minneapolis, for example, has 9 and 16. So I'm trying to think of how many we could, because we mentioned Spinlister. TriMet, Uber is going to be here eventually.
Cargo, Get Around.
Yeah, I wonder if that counts all the different taxi companies.
Three or four spinoffs there. Yeah. Other taxi companies.
Okay.
That's a tough number to reach.
And I'm not sure if the streetcar and like the metal Tylenol that goes up to OHSU. The tram.
metal tile. Yeah. What's up, Metaphor Jones?
Brandon Rhodes, former co-host, gets the credit for that one. Next up?
Well, next up, coming at you from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, their news and guide, and via bikeportland.org, a bill that would require neon clothes, government ID for cyclists.
Yeah. So this is a story about people. Let's see here. Where is it? 200 square inches of reflective neon could become required equipment for cyclists, along with government-issued identification, if legislators support a bill that came from the Wyoming State House on Thursday. This is
insane.
Sad. Yeah.
I don't know. Neon's really on trend right now, guys.
Neon's pretty hot.
It's pretty hot.
I mean,
next year it's not going to be quite so cool.
I was going to say literally hot, but it's hot pink is not literally hot, so just like, but hot pink does count, so that's an option.
It is figuratively hot.
Yes. They talked to a guy from Jackson Hole Community Pathways Coordinator, Brian Schilling. He says, I'm kind of in favor of requiring rear lights for cyclists. They don't require that here in Portland yet or in Oregon, but they do that in other places, I believe. The orange vest, he says, I think that's a little onerous. My 5-year-old kid, don't think her entire surface area is 200 inches. As far as the actual threat posed to public safety, a far greater good would be achieved by focusing on risky behavior of motorists. Damn straight.
Here.
Since they are operating vehicles with a far greater potential for causing injury or death, and they also have greater responsibility for safe operation of those vehicles. So it's sponsored by a number of douchebag senators in Wyoming. Editorial mine. So anyways, that's happening. I don't know. It reminds me of the bike licensing thing. Like they want to require, like, if you ride a bike, that you actually have to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles to get a license to operate your non-motorized vehicle.
You can actually set your watch by the amount of time it takes. You know, it's almost like with regularity. Every 4 months this comes up. And
Right. It's like a giant sundial.
Clockwork.
Yeah. This happens from time to time. But it makes about as much sense as that. It's a great idea. We're not saying you shouldn't wear neon, even 200 square inches of it, if you so desire.
Not even while biking, just in general.
Oh, yeah.
I think
any
just
old
for
time.
Overall visibility and party-related reasons.
Yeah. And religious reasons.
Sure.
Make it hot pink. But those are the sorts of things that safety seems like ordinarily should be, in my opinion, elective and not necessarily mandated by the government.
Okay.
Because that's just another reason to pull you over and screw with you if they feel like it. and all of our love to the cops who are helping us find our stolen bikes. That's good stuff.
That's true.
So, hey, let me pull up our mail because, you know, that's about what it's time for.
We got mail.
That never gets old to me, Aaron Flores. First up, I got a voicemail from Eric Iverson.
Hey, Brock and Aaron and fellow podcast listeners. This is Eric Iverson with a call to action for a group bike ride on Friday, February 13th. It's the monthly Clinton social ride in which we ride up and down Clinton to calm traffic in the hopes of making Clinton a safer neighborhood greenway. Join us at 5:30 at the Nightlight Lounge on 21st and Clinton. There will be grill bikes and sound systems. More details can be found on the shift list. Ride on fire.
He didn't say hashtag ride on fire, which is usually how that's put out there. Alvaro from California, I believe, recommends the Forward Thinking podcast. That's FW:thinking. I listened to this today, and I was not familiar with their show, but it was a good show about a lot of stuff about kind of urban design, actually, and maybe the future of how our cities might change to accommodate the bicycle, plus a couple of thoughts about what happens there. So thank you for that link. It was great. I recommend it highly. Logan sends us some Rivendell bikes in Portland. There's a test fleet. So if you have wanted a Rivendell bike and the only reason you didn't buy one was because you couldn't ride one and try it out, now there's a guy in town. It's kind of a secret, but it's on Facebook, so it's not really a secret. And if there's not one on Spinlister, then this is your guy.
Three of them now.
The actual rep. Nurse David, he says, do smartphones help or simplify our lives by reducing the amount of stuff we have and use, or do they burn up time and energy, literally considering how often they need to be charged out of proportion to what they give us? It's a good question because Aaron and I are always kind of evaluating that question. I'm curious from both of you, do you have opinions on smartphones? Are they a necessary evil? Are they amazing? Or are they the devil?
I think yes is the appropriate answer.
All the above. Yeah. Next question, please.
Moving on. All right, yeah. David says, I've been thinking about it lately because 2 months ago I voluntarily switched to a flip phone, which my wife Adele had for a long time, up until like just this last year. I think she had a flip phone and had never had anything different. The pros and cons of a connected lifestyle keep running through my head. I'd love to hear some intelligent conversation. So maybe someday we'll just sit down and talk about that exclusively. I am curious. I'm curious on everybody's thoughts about that.
Being carless, we need car to go, need zip car, need all these things. I'd be dead.
Well, that's the thing. And even transit.
Transit related stuff. Even in you name it. Totally get what they're saying. It's always really weird to be surrounded by 14 people and 13 of them are looking at the same device, and it's this weird antisocial moment. That
little glowing rectangle.
And everyone sort of acknowledges that it's terrible and wrong and goes
back. And
yet
it's so damn helpful.
Goes back to looking at the pictures of cats on the internet. Come on, it's okay. But as far as utilitarianism goes, yeah, come on.
It's like social drinking, really. I mean, yeah. You know that guy.
Just like that.
Especially on the bus.
You know that guy's an asshole when he drinks, and yet.
And yet.
Where nobody's saying anything.
Yeah.
That's just Portland. Portland's passive aggressive, right? Kind of, sometimes. Glenn up in Canada says, you need this gem on the podcast. Dr. Degley is a doctor. He built a bamboo bike and he roasts his own coffee. So I said, this can't wait. Glenn, will you interview him for me? And Glenn is going to do that. So we're going to have a guy from hashtag YEG, I guess, YEG, Edmonton, up in Canada. And we appreciate it. This will be our first foreign correspondent on the Sprocket podcast. So I'm excited about that. And they're going to do it real style with beer. So that's pretty much everything. Anybody have anything else they wanted to add before we tie this all in?
That's pretty
fantastic. Pull on the drawstrings of the podcast and tie them up.
I think this was pretty much perfect.
It really was.
You know?
I think it's pretty
really
well
was.
Done. Well done. Yeah. Well done, sir.
I enjoyed that IPA that we got from Beer Mongers. We're not sponsored by them, but if anybody at Beer Mongers wanted to give us free beer, we wouldn't object.
Oh, man.
We love that place. We talk about them all the time.
Can't say no to that.
Seriously. So, well, Leah, do you want to trade off on the end of the script down there with me?
I would love to.
Got it's bolded and not bolded.
I'm ready.
As before. Awesome. Okay. Ready to read a bunch of names?
I'm so ready to read a bunch of names.
Here it comes. All right. Find us on the internet at sprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text 503-847-9774.
Twitter to Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan Jalen for our theme music.
Kurt Bird for a headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny Kay, Shadowfoot, Katrina Melumgard.
Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie,
Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lane,
Richard Wazenski, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple,
Glenn Kubisch, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden,
Eric Wise, Doug Kogan Miller, Todd Parker,
Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt,
Zoe Campagna, Joe Blood, Allison Wiley,
and Andy Brunner, and Dave Knows now just recently. All right, everybody, have a good night. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Make the Gladys joke on the air, you're gonna hit me again.
I'll hit you, but I think I've gotten to the point where I answer to the name.
You really do.
Well, just because, like, in casual customer interactions, sometimes it's just easier. You're like, yeah, I'm Gladys.
Right.
I know what you're really asking.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, which is just like, are you the owner?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.